Record. Hello and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk Lean Spec Series. This is Cindy F. Solomon. I'm delighted to be here again. This is number 7 in our series with Malcolm Knapp of the Engineer Accelerator. Hi, Malcolm. How are you today?
I'm good. Yes, I'm with the Engineer Accelerator, and it is a professional training program for embedded systems and electrical engineers, giving them the professional skills that they need to be effective in their career.
And we're recording from the Port Workspaces at Kaiser Mall in beautiful downtown Oakland. And today we are talking about zeroing in on languaging, naming, certainly when it comes to hardware, how we refer to different aspects of the product are different than software. As well as within different organizations, as different internal names than external names. So we're going to zero in into this almost messy area where there's no standards across products necessarily, and things seem to be made according to, from my experience, the engineers' preferences.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, basically, you know, for me, is that there's just sort of, they're made by default, is really what's going on. It's not that there's, and so because the engineers sort of get first crack at the product, a lot of times they name the things. And so what this is about, and part of what the Lean Spec is about making it into a sort of a conscious process, because the names of things actually, especially the more precise they are and more descriptive they are, the easier it is to explain what they do, and it's also the easier it is for the less miscommunication there is. So that's part of what the Lean Spec is all about. It's about getting this shared language and actually making these names that everybody understands and agrees on.
And so let's isolate some of the difficulties around agreed names. In my experience, internal names or internal references to aspects of the product were code names. Certainly at Apple, they were intentionally obscure code names so no one else would understand or be able to publicly reference products in development and products that were not released or may not ever be released. So the code was intentionally cryptic. And I will say, as a woman, a lot of those code names were, I guess you'd call bro references, Star Wars references at best, sci-fi references, video game references, depending on the nature of the product, but certainly it was the culture of the engineers that were identifying the code names, and sometimes they were just internal jokes. They were not meant to be easy to understand. They had a history from within that culture or the group that was developing or thinking about the products, or they were inherited as part of some legacy around this product idea.
Yeah, so I think that, and that's one thing that you can do with a Lean Spec, is you can sort of draw that out, I guess, and make it sort of, so you as the product manager can actually understand what this all means. But especially when you're, you know, if you're starting out a new development and you're starting out with, I mean, for me, I'm coming back from the engineer's perspective. So there's referring to, I don't know exactly what level they refer to, you know, at Apple or other places, they can refer to the whole product in a code word. But when you're talking about the parts of the product and sort of what each thing does, then you have to, the sort of functionality, that sort of diving down to the next level of detail. For me, when I'm going through a Lean Spec process, naming those things accurately, actually, people will a lot of times, they'll name things in a very generic format or very, very generic words, you know, a display, or you know, the sort of buttons, or you know, sort of very, very, you know, this is a button, or the, but it's not what it's like. The what is the button for? What is the sensor doing? Is it a temperature sensor? Is it? And these are not necessarily hard sort of things to parse out, but because again, they're named, they're not named for precision. In the end, what happens is that you have. It's very easy for two parts of the team to talk about the same thing, but use different language, and so therefore they misunderstand each other.
Right.
And that's
where I really want to zero in,
yeah.
And why this is a product management issue.
Mm-hmm.
That in order for the product manager to bring this product to light and
mm-hmm.
and to communicate it to cross-functionally,
mm-hmm.
it really helps for the product manager to be in there
mm-hmm.
As early as possible, defining what those terms that the engineers understand,
mm-hmm.
what those mean,
mm-hmm.
as well as if there's standards for how these things are termed
mm-hmm.
Within the industry or the vertical,
mm-hmm.
applying that, or at least having that definition or that dictionary.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, you know, one of the big things about any product is that what terms work best for that product are very specific. And so what you have to do is every project I've been in, this new set of names get made, you know. And so it's not to say that there's one set and you just work from that one set. It's that every time you go through the process, you go through this sort of language generation. And it's sort of necessary to do, because otherwise you make efficient discussions about parts of the product, you have to encode them in names of the product, names that describe the lots of functionality, you know.
Well, so let me ask you, I would assume that mechanical engineers, mm. industrial engineers,
mm.
Specific software engineers
mm.
Have some course or some documentation
mm.
saying we, you know, from the international, the computer
mm.
machine organizations, from
mm.
the precedented organizations saying, here's what we call this.
So the thing is that, you know, there are pretty standard names for lots of things, but, you know, the thing is that that's the technical or the technical description of that. Like an amplifier is a very standard name for a, you know, operational amplifier is a very standard name. But that is something that's disconnected from the product itself. What is that? What is the function of that amplifier? You know, and that's the name. That's its function. That's its sort of block function in the product. And so when you say I want to talk about this amplifier, and then there's three in the system, which one are you referring to? And so you have to say, well, it's the temperature sensor amplifier, or it's the, you know, preamp for the audio system, you know.
Right.
And so you have to have a name for that, and that name is really dependent on what the product is doing.
And so this is a contextual name.
Yeah.
That, which is referring to how it's used,
mm-hmm.
what the value is for its functioning.
Yeah.
So this is why product managers need to have domain awareness
mm-hmm.
to understand what how that kind of product
mm-hmm.
is generally made,
mm-hmm.
but then to be able to understand the specific connotations of how that function is used within this new product that's being
yeah.
IDI.
So they need to know that, again, the sort of block level, we've talked about this before, the sort of one of the parts of this lean spec is a block diagram or a flow diagram. And so you need to understand what an op-amp is. You don't need to understand the circuit diagram that is associated with that, but you need to know that there's an amplifier there. But for another example is that if you talk about user interfaces, you know, there is a lot of times a user interface for the main user, you know, a computer, you know, a keypad and the screen and stuff like that. But then there's a lot of times a debugging interface or a sort of technician interface that could be just, it's a, just a text-based command line interface. And so to be able to distinguish between those two and to say which one are you referring to, you have to name them. Like one is the technician interface and one is the user interface or one is the, you know, operator interface, you know. And so again, the specific names you choose are really, really dependent on the specifics, the functionality you're trying to do, but you have to encode that functionality in the name of the thing. Otherwise, you end up spending, you have to explain it every single time, the whole long paragraph about which one you're talking
or
about.
Or you have to have a glossary, which the product manager needs to create, saying, here's the name, here's what this is referring to, here's how it functions, here's how it's related. I mean, that,
well, that's what the lean that's what the lean spec is sort of saying, here's the name and here's what it's doing and here's, you know, all the, that's what you're capturing in that that document. And the other thing about it is that it forces all the participants to agree on the definition of what that name means and what the scope about that, you know, what is the functionality associated with that name, because that's the other thing about it. If you end up with people using the same word but meaning different things, then that's expectations that have been set and that will not be met. You know?
Right. And so here's why I think this is a critical and valuable process for the product manager to own, drive, guide.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collaborative creation.
Yeah.
It's not the product manager naming it.
No.
It's perhaps the product manager questioning at least five whys or deeper and being blankety-blank annoying to really draw this out.
Mm-hmm.
But having this document enables the product manager to get the job done and get buy-in from the very beginning. And I just want to say that often when the product manager is involved this directly from, ideally from the beginning of the product, they're considered a technical product manager. And often the organizations, that's why they prefer an engineer from the team to serve as the product manager. But the difference here is the engineer is thinking only of functionality, whereas it's a value to have the product manager who is thinking about how are we going to translate this beyond functionality? How are we going to translate this to the end users, to the market, to the marketing, to everyone else within the organization who will need to create value to fund, source, and launch and drive this product?
Well, this is gets into that. I mean, that's you know, that gets into bigger issues about, you know, beyond just the engineering. But one thing, one effect of really working at the naming of things is that, you know, there's this the unique selling proposition that shows
USP,
up in, at marketing all the time, and it's really a useful thing where you collapse all the stuff that you're doing down to one sentence. Well, you can think of a name as collapsing that one sentence down to one word or two words, you know. And so if you really can capture what is going on in that short amount of words, you know, that little bit of information, you really, that's really powerful. And yes, it's annoying and nitty gritty in a lot of times, but it just speeds, you know, speeds up the communication so much, and it also clarifies, you know, words mean things.
Yes.
And so by choosing a word, by really thinking about what the word means and whether that matches what you're doing, it really clarifies what you are doing.
Right.
You know.
And not only do words mean things, there are biases inherent in the meanings. There's expectations and assumptions. And those are the things that we're shedding light on.
Mm.
What are those assumptions?
Yeah.
What are those expectations that may be all agreed upon by the engineers,
mm-hmm.
or by the previous products?
Mm-hmm.
But how do we capture those,
mm-hmm.
and bring them to light,
mm-hmm.
in a, you know, maybe messy way, in order to make them concise?
Yeah, and so, I mean, here's another good example. I mean, we talked about LEDs before. You know, LEDs are, you know, all the blinky lights, and a lot of times in products you have, like, you know, that's your interface, you know. But naming, in the manual, naming that LED really matters to the user, because if it's not clear what that LED is representing, the only thing that they have nothing else to go on, you know. And so choosing the names of your LEDs is just one, is it for the example, is an example of why this is so important, because a blinking LED can mean many, many things. But if you know what the name of the LED is, then it really narrows down what could possibly be going on.
So give us an example of even how you would name a blinking LED distinct from the other blinking LEDs.
Well, so I went through this process, and it, you know, this is where it comes down. This is the thing about names, is that the specific name you choose is not, is the if between, choosing between two words that are really close to each other, one or the other, if they're pretty much there, that you can choose one or the other, and it's you're done. But it's also because there's no real criteria to choose, you can go around and around and around and around and around forever about, you know, naming things. This is the other part of naming, is as important as you when you get down to the end, and you end up with, you can, the criteria for distinguishing things can get hard. So you just have to choose it at some point. But choosing LED names, I was doing it with one, and we had to go through, and we had like four or five LEDs, and we had to think about the information. First, we had to sort of describe the information they were supposed to be representing. What is all the different cases we have, independent of the number, and that sort of helped us figure out how many LEDs we needed. You have to figure out the information it's supposed to represent, all the different cases, and then you map it over to the LED states, on, blinking, off, you know, those different LED states will represent this bit of information.
And those states are distinct from the, we're not yet talking about user experience. We're not yet talking about end user or customer interaction with the product yet.
Well, I mean, the thing is that you know what information you want to represent, you think the user wants to know, and then you have to, then you do a mapping, but that mapping is dependent on the sort of user experience, user interaction things, like, for example, blinking things people will notice, because they notice that that's what eyes are designed to do, you know, where something goes solid on, then they could be missed. Those are the considerations you get in for, like, error conditions. This is why when there's an error, a lot of times you see a blinking light, is because it means someone will, that's attracting attention. But, you know, one time I actually had the power light for a hard drive was blinking slowly. That was, you know, it was blue light, and during the day it looked right, but the moment I turned off the lights and tried to sleep, I had a blinking light in my eyes, and it meant I actually couldn't sleep. So, again, that mapping is and it gets into other issues, but it just sort of, it's you know, for a power LED, having it turn solid on, you know, just turn on and stay on is exactly what you need, you know. But again, you know, is it, you know, there is this thing about, is it the power LED? Is it the, you know, the Bluetooth status? Is that what it's showing? You know, these things matter, you know, to the user, and also then to the internal team when they're discussing things. Yeah.
So this, it's at this point,
yeah,
and we've discussed this before, that who needs to be present for these discussions,
mm-hmm.
and clearly for naming, not only the engineers, but the UX people, if they exist,
if they're talking about something that's user facing,
or the industrial designer, mm-hmm. if they exist, or the design person, whoever that may be. Maybe it's a, maybe the engineering team has that person on their team who's also involved in the technical development.
Yeah. So again, it's sort of, this is this high level discussion, and you know, these names can come from anywhere, basically, but the key thing is that everybody agrees to them and they've agrees what they represent. You know, I mean, this is something I actually do quite a lot, is I actually figure out the definition first and then figure out what the name that captures that definition.
Thank you. There might be some external noise, but this is an important point.
Yeah.
Please repeat that.
It's so that what you're basically doing is you're figuring out the definition, you know, the function, and then you figure out a name that best represents that function, you know.
So function defines usability,
mm-hmm.
or no, that's not it. Actually, the function drives appropriate nomenclature.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the what the thing is sort of the functionality of the product is constant. It will never, but the name of that could change, you know. So, you know, what you're trying to do is figure out a name that best captures that. Again, it's a compression of information. And so you have all this functionality, you know, you have a whole temperature, you know, measurement chain, and you're trying to say, you know, what is that? That is the engine temperature, you know, sort of system, you know. And that name capture is a compression of a huge amount of information, you know. And so you're figuring, so that's what you're basically doing. You're taking this definition or this description and you're naming that with one word.
We're also at a critical juncture in the thinking of this product because in today's innovation and competitive environment for new products, the design is what's critical. The design is where the competitive advantage is.
Mm-hmm.
So many things function the same way or produce the same result, but who's winning in the marketplace? It's who has the most elegant design and maybe the simplest functionality. Or the most elegant functionality, but that's the easiest to use,
mm-hmm.
the easiest for the end user,
mm-hmm.
Which makes things even more complex at this level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, you know, this gets into when you're talking about user-facing stuff, you know, naming comes into that because, you know, just this work about making things clear to the user, someone has to go through that exercise about, you know, what is a good name that does that. So, you know, all the user-facing stuff has an added burden beyond just, you know, the technical functionality. It has to communicate what it does. This is why, I mean, this is a classic thing about the naming of the desktop for a computer interface is a name, but it's not a desktop.
Right, but that has a historic reason why it became a desktop.
Well, but, and so, yeah. So
this
there's
is
a,
the
there's
same
a,
with dialing a phone.
Yeah, but the thing is that specific name communicated to the user how to use it, you know, and so... you know, that this is one of those things about why naming can be powerful, is it can give the user the, you know, all the information they need or a starting point to what they can, how to use the product.
But you also get into references
yeah.
to what the user's comfort level or experience
mm-hmm.
is.
Yep.
And that's why desktop was historic
mm-hmm.
in terms of keeping the users in a comfort level that
mm-hmm.
they were already used to interacting with a computer monitor.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so, I mean, it's this interesting thing is that you, as we sort of talked about, you know, we're trying to convince, say, that naming is important. But as I was saying before, is at a certain point, you get down to where naming can bog you down as well, you know. And so I guess that there's this other side of things where at a certain point you have to go with what you have, you know, because like you could spin around that, you know, it's like, you know, design, any sort of design thing where you could move the margin in by 3 pixels and see how that, and then move it in by 4, you know. So I think that naming, you know, can be really powerful. It is something that is a lot of times just, like I said, was just done to, you know, someone who, the engineer in front of them just decided, here's what we're going to call it, you know. And then that's what people started using, but it may not be accurate, or it may not be, confusing to other members of the team, especially if you're not talking to other engineers. You can get into a jargon situation. So sort of to bring it up and to make it into this high-level discussion, when you're making the lean spec, you are creating the language that everybody will use going forward to talk about it. And the more precise and more descriptive that language can be, the more efficient you can communicate, and also the better you can describe it to everybody else, to you know, inside the company and outside.
So we've identified the need to name appropriately based on functionality.
Yeah.
So I immediately go to the process of arriving at that.
Mm-hmm.
Should the product manager show up with this list of, here are all the things that needs to be within the product, and now we delve into each one to come up with the appropriate function and therefore the appropriate naming? Or do we all come in fresh and say, okay, we're going to throw up on this whiteboard, we're just going to go through every piece of the product, but where do you start? It's overwhelming.
Well, but that's the thing, is it's just, you know, as we were saying before, is you can start in any point in the product, and because everything is related, you just work out from there, and it'll sort of fill itself out. But the key thing is that whenever you encounter a new block or a new behavior, a new bit of functionality, you need to decide on a name together, but what is that going to be? You know, onboarding is a classic sort of description of a certain set of functionality, you know, and a certain type of behavior as well. And so it's a good word for a very specific user experience, you know. But someone had to come up with that name for that whole set of things, you know. And so that's what you do. It's again collaborative. You know, you have to make sure you do not, and no one person knows everything. And so what you have to do is you have to go through, and when you come up to it, like you were saying, come up into a new sort of feature, a new behavior, a new bit of functionality, you then decide on a name at that point. And so you don't have to decide all the names and then make them all perfect at one, you know, thing. When you encounter something new, a new functionality, you should name it.
One of the issues is that the engineers want to be building. They
mm-hmm.
don't want to wait until we figured out necessarily the functionality or the naming or the appropriate. They just want to solve the problem and produce the result.
Mm-hmm. So
how do you hold them back until we figured out?
Well, but that's the thing, is that this is building. This is the classic thing, is that we've been said this before, is that this is the engineering, you know. You know,
it seems like this would fall under the planning process.
So, well, that's what I'm saying. This is the lean spec. This is, you do this during lean spec, which is engineering the product, figuring out, you know, are we going to have 4 buttons or 3? Are we going to do, is it going to be, you know, is it going to need a display or not? Or is it going to, like, what kind of thing is that going to look like? Is it going to have, you know, that is this sort of, that level of the product, you know, that's defining what the product is. It is the engineering. And yes, the naming is something that, again, is, you know, you can say, well, that just, we should just choose a name and move on. You call it Lemon, you know, or you know, Dog, and we'll just go forward, and then we have a name for it. But then what I'm saying is that you should not just choose the first thing that comes to your mind. Think about it for a second. And then when you get that second or third thing that's very descriptive, it helps you define the product that much better. So this is engineering, but like I was saying, it's engineering the virtual prototype inside your brain, you know, or inside the brains of the group, you know.
So then the lean spec, if you will, is a process
mm-hmm.
that is part of the product development phase.
Mm-hmm. It's you know, as we were saying, you validated that there's a need, you validated that there's a market there that can you make money from that need, and then you have to define the product that you will build to fill that need. You know, and that like could be meant there, like as we were saying, many thousands or lots of different products that could, you know, but you want to figure out which one you will build, and the lean spec process is how you go about defining that product, and part of that, one of the subparts of that, is this naming thing, this process of going through and figuring out and paying attention to the names you give things. So that when you come out of the whole process, everybody can speak the same language, and that language is is very descriptive about what the product does.
And that's where the value and my excitement with this lean spec process is in creating the efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that the product managers are doing their product spec, their product requirement spec, and handing it to the engineers who then offer themselves figuring this out. It's where we're cutting out dysfunction and increasing the effectiveness and the efficiency, whereas the product managers and the engineers and other involved people are increasing the velocity of developing this product in a collaborative fashion from the get-go.
Yeah, well, the thing is that this is not throw the stuff over the wall.
Right.
This is what it means to collaborate, is you have to you really have to spend time with people and hash the thing out. And, you know, I know it can be frustrating a bit sometimes to really communicate, you know, really sort of understand where another person is coming from and why they're coming from that, why they're sort of stating that position. But that, you know, those hard points, if those are figured out now, then things can flow later on. If they're not figured out, then that's a potential showstopper later on, you know, where you get down to, you know, actual hardware and you're trying to actually, and then you realize why they were so insistent on that, you know.
And again, why it's critical to educate product managers about this struggle, if you will,
mm-hmm.
is because they've inherently come in too late.
Yeah.
That the product problem is why they're hired.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem, it's not working. The more they delve into it, it gets down to, at least in my experience, it was at the inception of the product where things were not clear,
yep.
and it took too long for the customers to stop purchasing or to complain or tech support to say, hey, this is not clear, or the user manual can't be written because no one can explain why that is working or isn't working in that fashion.
But as we were saying before, is that the lean spec can be done when it's too late. It's not like it loses functionality, or it's too late. You missed the starting point. You can do it when you're already in process, and you can then sort of capture where you're at, and then capture the difference about where you're at and where you want to be. So it can be done, you know, from the beginning all the way up to when you have hardware, basically, or when you're really into sort of architecture level sort of stuff. It can be you do have a window there where you can collect things and define what you're making before you get too far down the whole process that'll just cost a lot of money to reset. So it is possible to do this whenever you come into a project and it's not working, you can still do the lean spec.
And it's a brilliant way then to onboard quickly new product managers
mm-hmm.
into the product development
mm-hmm.
phase. If they have to deconstruct in order to create this shared collaborative document.
Mm.
It's going to increase their exposure and ability to collaborate with the engineers, and ideally increase their respect and ability to fix or foresee obstacles.
Yeah, well, the thing is that it's also not a sort of antagonistic role, because you can use it, and all you're trying to do is say, we're trying to put this stuff down on paper, and then when conflicts appear, it's like, well, here's a conflict, what do you guys want to do about it? You know, so the product manager does not actually have to sort of lay down the law in any situation. It's up to wherever conflict arises, it's up to the two people, the designer and the engineer, who have to hash it out. What the product manager can do is say, well, we have a conflict. What do you guys want to do about it? And then you have to you create a space for that conflict to be resolved.
Excellent. And in some cases, it actually is defined. It's a technical project manager who might be driving things at the project level, depending on the size of the organization and the culture and what's in place. But as I do product therapy weekly, and I have product managers as well as inventors and founders come to me weekly, and they don't have this process documented for where what everything is about the product. So, you know, I'm helping them zero in on where the issues are. And it's often a novel and fun thing for me when you see the light come on, when they realize, oh, wow, we hadn't thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, wow, that didn't occur to us, that was critical.
Yeah. So, you know, this, the lean spec, you know, as sort of wrap up, basically, you know, this sort of a bunch of pieces to it, and the naming is just one of them. But it's something that I think, you know, to sort of pull that out and make it sort of higher on people's lists of that it is actually important to think about it and see what you can come up with from there. So, but, you know, this is where things get, you know, this is why it's so fun.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for another enjoyable session.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah.
And this has been Cindy F. Solomon. You can follow me at Cindy F. Solomon on Twitter. StartupProduct.com is the blog where you can find all of the episodes, as well as the other Global Product Management Talk archives and the Innovation Everyday Innovator with Chad McAllister. And this is also available on iTunes at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. And you can find Malcolm
at I'm at theengineeraccelerator.com, and I will be on Slack soon.
Excellent. We look forward to your insights, feedback, and questions, and have a great week.